Hey, listeners. We've been looking for a better way to connect with you, get your feedback, and build a fantastic guild of six-figure devers. So, we started a Slack channel. Come and join us, geek out about nerdy things, find mentors, be a mentor, and help us build an awesome community. Just go to slack.sixfiguredev.com to get your invite. We'll see you there. Hello and welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I am John Calloway.
I am Clayton Hunt.
And I am John Ash.
With us today is David Ledgerwood. Ledge is the host of Gun.io's The Frontier Podcast, where he interviews professionals across the software engineering leadership spectrum. Welcome, David.
It's so good to be here, guys. Good to spend time with you.
So, David, before we get started, would you tell us maybe a little bit how you got started, how you got started in the industry? And
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a recovering developer, but it has been more and more years since I got to legitimately write code. I did study computer science and business out of Bucknell University, Pennsylvania. And at the time, it's just coming up on the end of we thought it was not the end, but it was the end of the dot-com, sort of explosion, and everyone had to get a job, in sort of big box consulting. So I was one of many, many that went and did my, Fortune 500 tour of duty at PricewaterhouseCoopers. And out of just, things that came up, I started being a Bash developer. So I wrote Bash scripts for 3 years. And so, I fell in love with the pipe, the other pipe. And and then out of that, moved out to a private media company where I helped build out a bunch of websites for when newspapers were moving primarily to online. So I saw the, sort of massive disruption of media, through like Craigslist and, Monster and all those things at that time. It was just like, wow, like all of our revenue streams are changing. And so that was neat. And I got the entrepreneurial itch. So I dropped my job and I moved to Nashville, Tennessee to start a company. And I never looked back. So that was 12 years ago. And I've had a bunch of entrepreneurial adventures here and a lot of consulting. I kind of have ping pong between, consulting work and startup work for years, while you get the fire back, do a little consulting to sort of recover from the last adventure, and don't get to code anymore, but I sort of moved to the business side and business development, and always been, big into mentorship and startups and things like that. So joined the guys at Gun.io in 2015, and I got to build and run sales and services sections of the business for quite a while. I started the podcast, almost like a side project, my 20% time last year was just, I just wanted to have conversations with neat people and learn stuff, what was going on in the field. And people started listening and thought it was interesting. So we just kept doing more and more of that, and got the opportunity this year to move over to the marketing team and do this as my job. So it's been super cool, and appreciate the support of the company and all that. It's fun working with professional freelancers. That's our crew, and you guys can totally relate. I think you're all in the boat there. So.
Yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit more about Gun.io? What do you guys do there?
Sure. So we started way back 2011, so early internet time. In, I think the overall collection of what we do is we help, sort of really senior professional freelance developers work with companies, right? And we can connect the dots there. And so there's a marketplace component to it. And I think what's different is it's not, sort of all self-serve, click, sort of faceless, relationshipless, kind of thing that we do for people. So, you know, we're really interested in the human connections of the freelancers that we work with, and providing a really authentic kind of experience there. So all of our freelancers are people that pass through, you know, really high levels of vetting. We only work with really senior folks. And I've heard you guys talk about, you know, leveling and how do you define senior and all that. You know, so for us, that looks like at least 7 to 10+ years of experience. And, you know, really have been around, got the production chops, been there, done that. And also have, you know, a really high level of character, soft skill development. You know, so we have a rigorous process that we kind of put everybody through. It's kind of boot campy at the beginning. But once you get into the community, you know, you can really count on the fact that, I mean, I really resonate with the six-figure developer, you know, because we've done the studies and we know that we can set up that kind of relationship for folks. And I think of professional freelancers as, you know, types who have a very high level of independence, you know, the independence gene, but maybe not, you know, the entrepreneurial sort of, I want to run sales, marketing, operations, finance, billing, you know, all that stuff. And so we can do that and we can act as agents to do that. So I think of us as like, you know, kind of the high-end sports agents, you know, the Jerry Maguires of senior developers, you know, show us the money and we're going to take care of everybody. So
what about those that are, you know, still doing their tour of duty in corporate America, you know, looking to maybe go out on their own and start looking into freelancing? What advice would you have for those individuals, or, you know, how can you set yourself up for success?
Yeah. I think, you know, look, it's a great time to do that. I think all of us are well aware that it's probably the six-figure plus developer at this point. So, you know, it's a seller's market, right? So yeah, you need to prepare yourself for the experience then of, you know, in our world, that's going to be largely remote. We do have a high level of desire, right, from that independent professional to work remote. But I would contrast that, you know, it's not sort of this digital nomad type of vibe, you know, with the stock photos and the MacBook on the beach in Fiji and log in once in a while, you know. So in that way, it's really good for the, you know, maybe the former corporate professional, right? I mean, all you guys are there. You're at your home office, at your desk. You know, this is your jam. This is what you do. And it would not be unreasonable to spend, you know, 8 hours at the desk and be accountable and be attentive. So in that way, I think the job's really similar. The place I see sometimes people, you know, sort of not fall down, but struggle a little bit coming out of corporate is going to be like your team's probably going to be super small, going to be really remote, right? You know, so fully distributed, and it changes the paradigm of communication quite a bit. And so my advice would be really think about how you build the communication skills necessary to really work. Over communicate, be effective as a remote professional. And if you've done that already, you know, that's great. But the tooling tends to be a little bit different, you know, so that you really need to take a lot of like personal accountability for the way you communicate. And knowing that in freelance land, you very well may get, you know, placed onto a scrum team, you know, that's one of 50 and it's big. And, you know, we have sort of big clients, but it's equally likely and sometimes desirable to come into the frame of, you know, a client maybe who isn't technical and is an entrepreneur building a thing, but, you know, well-financed, right? And that's a good experience too. So you might have that experience of where you, if you ever turned your nose up at the non-technical sort of business user or executive or maybe BA or something, you're going to want to flush that right away, right? Because, you know, that's your client now in a lot of cases. So, you know, I've talked to like, I don't know, 100 CTOs and people like that at different levels on our podcast. And if one word comes up more than anything, it's empathy, right? And, you know, start to communicate and start to care a lot about what the other people are doing out there, because that's what's really going to be your evaluation. You know, I think it's like kind of like doctors, right? You know, like, no, doctors don't get sued unless they're kind of jerks, right? You know, like nobody sues the doctor who they like, even if they kind of don't do a great job. So, you know, be cool when people like you.
So with that, do you find that it's more, is it the technology that people need to study up on, or is it more of the soft skills, the communications and those types of things?
It's 80% soft. You know, I think like you've got to have that 20% basis of serious technology experience, you know, polyglot, which is a word I never learned until I hung out here. And then, you know, just know what you're great at, know how to talk about when you're not great at something, but it's so soft. You know, it's really going to be about the, I would think of it like almost like you're now an executive and you need to be able to hang in the business environment as well. You know, nobody sets out to spend 150 grand or whatever on a piece of software and not get business results. Right. So, maybe having been in the sales seat, you know, myself, like I'm always thinking about, you know, what is this person really buying? And I would encourage developers to get out of that, you know, sort of sequential or engineering mindset, maybe a little bit, if you're going to go freelance and think about what the real value is for these people. They're not just buying code. In fact, in many cases, they'll never even look at code. You know, maybe they're buying functionality, maybe they're buying features, but more than that, you know, they're investing their money into something that is going to bring them value for their business, most likely. You know, there aren't a lot of hobby projects out there.
Yeah, a lot of the difficulty I have in speaking with clients and potential clients is, especially early on in making the transition into doing more freelance work, is coming from a corporate environment. I'm used to selling time. Selling my time for money and hopefully delivering a quality product. But really, it's better if you can change that conversation, especially with outside vendors and clients, and try to find out what the value that they're trying to achieve and see if you can change the narrative a little bit and try to sell the value. Mm-hmm. Then you can change it completely and you don't have to worry necessarily about selling time.
Yeah, and that's a good point too, to help you think about as you're entering your career, like, are you a person that is inclined to do that? Because if you are, you might have a really good sense of how to go out there and you know, represent yourself, right? And you may not even need a service like us to come in and help. You know, a lot of people just find that I don't want to do anything except be a craftswoman of code. You know, I think like, I want to be a code poet, you know, and don't bring me anything else like that. I don't want to do anything else. But if you are, you know, sort of self-actualized enough and you can learn how to re-speak and value and do all that stuff, it could be a really great opportunity. Just, you know, really go out on your own. I can tell you a lot of people find that, and I'm sure you all can relate that, you know, you spend a tremendous amount of time on your business development activities. And therefore, you know, you're really only billing or adding value, you know, half the time, which means you got to double your rate to figure that out. And I think that's the surprising part about going freelance, and not just in development. I mean, so the same thing in, you know, any kind of level of consulting, that you need to really think about. Ultimately, there are only, you know, if you're basically, whether or not you want to do dollars per hour in the way you price or think, there are only a limited number of hours, and it does derive down to that. So, you know, we get a ton of people that come in and say, you know, well, I'm my rate's $250 an hour. And say, cool. If you can do that, then you should go do that and not talk to us. But I think that posturing comes from the idea of, we're all taught, you know, when you go, how do I price my time and service? We're taught to factor in the risk. We're taught to factor in that you're not going to be billing all the time, that you have the overhead of business development, marketing, finance, billing, net 90 terms, you know, sometimes clients won't pay. So if all of that sounds awful to you, a partner like us is a really great tool because you don't have to deal with any of it. And you're just, you know, you're going to get paid and you get to do your craft and deliver awesome results. And so you can certainly limit that risk factor. However, if you want to do all those things, I talk to a lot of developers that are just like, yeah, I'm pretty awesome at sales. Like maybe I sat in the sales engineering team or what have you, you know, that could be great. And hey, you're right. You don't have to pay a rake to anybody else. So that's kind of cool.
Just to kind of clarify a little bit, how does the Gun.io freelancing model where you're sort of like the agent sort of compare to the consulting model where someone is sort of paying you salary, but then they're placing you at different, you know, clients, either by project or like on a staff aug situation?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can certainly speak to us. You might've had, I don't know, you know, if you had the experience of like on the far side of our, you know, marketplace kind of world is like maybe an Upwork, right? Where you can, client X posts a project, and you know, then a bunch of people kind of bid on it, and they say, "Well, I'll do it for this. I'll do it for that."
And then it's just a race to the bottom at that point.
Well, that is exactly right, and that is the. I can understand as a client why you might want to do that if, in fact, you are willing to accept the idea that all developers and results of developers are created equal. And so, you know, that's a challenge, right? We all know that that's not true. So then, you know, fully on the other side, right, you'd have the world where, you know, you can fully represent yourself and you can just go sell everything and, you know, work is banging down your door. You got a great reputation. You got too many emails coming in. You can choose your project and build whatever you want. Like, that's awesome. You know, somewhere in the middle probably is a reality for more developers or any professionals. So when you have that situation, maybe I should say, like, what we do as an agent is, you know, we get all the inbounds. We need to kind of figure out, hey, who are the people that we feel comfortable exposing to one of the professionals who trust us in the community. So it's like, as an agent, you need to take the responsibility of making sure that this is a person that I want someone who trusts me to be exposed to. And, you know, there's an equal level of vetting on the client versus, you know, like matched with the developers. It's just some people that none of us wants to, you know, work with. And we put in the extra training and support necessary on both sides, you know, as necessary. So it is nice to think at times people get to tag us in on both sides and say, I want this to work. You know, I'm just not sure, like such and such is a difficult thing. If you never manage a developer and you've never been managed in that way, you know, there could be like communication gaps. And sometimes somebody watching from the sidelines is kind of helpful to coach with that. Did I answer the question?
Kind of, I guess. How is it different from being in a consulting position, right, where you're working directly for a consulting company? Because they're basically doing this, they're kind of playing the agent role as well, but then they sort of have you on staff.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
So how does that differentiate from being the freelancer?
Sure. So all of, at least, you know, in our world, all of our folks are 1099 by us. So they are contractors, they are logging time, and they're getting paid for that time. Now we actually do a neat thing where you log time with us and you get paid the next week. So there is none of this net 90 or sort of bad debt collection or those things. So that's a really nice thing when you're building stability. Some of the neat stories that have come back is just, you know, people who qualify for mortgages as the primary income for their household, you know, based on being a freelancer on our platform. Now that's pretty awesome because that doesn't happen a lot, you know, and any of you tried to, you know, go with your 1099 income and get qualified for a loan, like, you know, they kind of give you the side eye. So we know that creates a level of stability. It removes the risk. We also, we don't haggle with, you know, we trust developers to understand their value and their rate and to, you know, we're just big into rate integrity. You can come say you want to get paid whatever you want to get paid, and we're not going to argue with you at all. What we will say is you have just limited yourself to the 1% of projects. And, you know, so there's certainly a market dynamic there. And so we have this thing, you won't be able to make what you ask for. Would you like to throw your hat into the ring? And so there's an optionality to that where it's not race to the bottom because you get to choose. However, there is a supply and demand component that we do everything we can to fund a great deal of marketing to keep the market liquid on both sides. But the result of that is that, you know, there's information parity. And so, you know, prices are going to fall in line for what someone can afford and what someone's willing to give.
Cool. So it sounds like you're getting still some of the stability and you're getting all of the like benefit, like you're talking about, of the agent kind of working for you, having those pipelines open, connecting with those projects, getting vetted, being able to vet clients, all of that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But you still have some more flexibility, some more power over choosing your own, what you're working on, choosing,
that's right,
you know how much you're going to get paid and that sort of thing. So you,
yeah,
you know, like a nice step in the direction of being able to do everything yourself potentially.
Yeah, absolutely right. So, you know, you do take that responsibility to choose. And look, you know, you're always in that spot of like, hey, if I have an open spot on my calendar this month, right? You know, like I got to think, like, you know, it's like airline seats, right? You know, if that flight takes off and there's nobody in that seat, nobody's getting paid. So how much do I want to discount right now, this particular hour, which is, you know, we deal in essentially perishable assets. You know, like the produce is going to go on sale at the store. You might get a super deal if you show up the day that it's not moldy, right? But you get to choose, you know, when you go on vacation, right? All these things. So, you know, yeah, it's a level of responsibility that you need to take. No one's going to make you do it. You get to choose. But also if you let it go, like maybe the next one won't come up for a few weeks and, you know, then you like legit aren't getting paid. So the next level of security would be that if you are someone that's just like, I, myself, my family and my other stakeholders cannot tolerate a differential in income ever.
Right.
You should go take a salary and be on staff at a consulting company or, you know, a corporate parent. And that's totally cool. People go through different levels. I used to be a financial planner too. You know, one of my adventures, sidecar adventures. And so I just tell people like, you know, do the honest assessment of that, right? Because risk is a real thing. And you know, what you did before you had several kids and a house and, you know, all that, like it changes it. And, you know, maybe you rely on your spouse or partner for medical benefits, right? You know, huge deal, right? We're in America. Like we can't figure out healthcare, you know, unless it comes from corporate. So we need to be honest about those things. And it's cool. Like we have people come and go from the community, you know, say, hey, I'm going to go take this job because it's a neat opportunity came my way. Right on. You know, come back when you're ready in 18 months. Cause we all know like attrition is high and time and job in our industry is low. So that's cool. You know, you're always welcome to come back, stay in the community and, you know, all that. So
awesome. Awesome. Thank you.
Out of curiosity, with Gun.io, and it sounds like it might be possible, can you take on multiple clients at a time?
That does happen. Yeah. We try to, I think we're really sensitive to, and we have enough data to show this, you know, hundreds of thousands of hours. It's really rare that anyone does well with more than two at the same time. And recommendation would be that, and we tell people on both sides that you do 20 hours with one, 20 hours with the other. That's pretty reasonable. But it is not a good idea for anyone that we've seen to have to really split three, four ways. There's not a great level of understanding on the client side of like, why can't you pay attention to me all the time? And, you know, brain sharding is a real phenomenon. None of us are as good a multitasker as we think. And the discipline of engineering and development requires focus. I don't think we want people to shard it too much. And so we don't tend to bring on a lot of clients even that are just, well, I only need 5 hours a week. Maybe that's a secondary, you know, for somebody else, like, you know, hey, I just need you to swap my logs and, you know, write some scripts and just kind of do maintenance or, you know, whatever. Okay. That could be a secondary activity, but it's not a good idea to take on more than two things at the same time. We're pretty adamant about that.
Okay. Yeah. I was asking because one of the benefits that a lot of people get from freelancing is that you don't have that issue of getting fired, because if a client fires you, you've got two or three clients, you know, you've still got that backup.
Yeah.
And another thing is, you know, oh, well, the contract's ending and mm-hmm. we don't have work for the next month and a half.
Yeah.
But if you can take on multiple clients, then maybe there's that 2-3 week overlap, if nothing else, where you pick up a new client while you're closing out the previous client.
Yeah, you certainly can do that. And I just think one of the other benefits of having somebody like you have a full business development and marketing department, right? That's working for you. So in a talent department, right? So as soon as anyone in that whole mix and ops and finance and whatever gets the inkling that this thing is going to end and now they're going to wrap up, like, boom, your flag goes up and you're immediately back in the pool where we're looking for the next thing for you to do. And, you know, no independent professional has like 10 people working for them, you know, as their representative, trying to make sure that they are continuing to get paid. Now, is that a guarantee? Of course not. You know, there's ebbs and flows, you know, things happen. Maybe you're a more specialized, you know, I don't know, Angular developer, right? And right now there needs to be an Angular thing that walks in the door and wants to do business. But also, you're typically in the last mile of a project is the time where it really ramps up and there's like a high stress. Is that the time that you really want to be shopping and trying to put yourself out there, you know, and interviewing and doing proposals, you know, like, well, you don't have to do that. So, you know, you get to wind down and like have the opportunity to kind of walk in and have somebody else taking care of you. So that level of care, I think, does matter. Yeah.
What are your recommendations that you might give to the listeners to improve their soft skills and communication, potentially even sales? And you put a pretty heavy emphasis on empathy, so that one as well. What would you say to them about how to improve those things?
You could certainly do some personal study. I don't think that, you know, sometimes people think there's a magic kind of, you either have it or you don't, right? And I would suggest that, you know, as a developer, you consume a tremendous amount of, you know, blog posts, probably, you watch tutorials and videos, you learn the next language. You know, you follow your, you know, sort of key influences. Well, that's the same for any discipline. And, you know, over the years of doing a lot of sales work, you know, I read like 30 sales books and I watch a lot of videos and I listen to audiobooks, and it's all the same thing. You know, I think we all work in this complex system of interacting, you know, relationships, right? And that's where the empathy thing comes in, because you kind of go like, let's take 95% of the people are not showing up at the table to try to screw anybody. They're just trying to get some work done. And so if I can learn to think like that person a little bit, and of course, you know, put some of the tricks of the trade to use, it's all about spending the time to develop yourself. So if I could recommend, you know, some particular resources, like it's Cialdini, I think is his name, like the influence and power kind of selling techniques, Robert Cialdini, I think that one gave me a lot to think about. You know, it's Psychology of Influence, maybe it's called. That's a great book, you know, because I think that even if you're not ever going to go out and sell for like try to get a deal done, you know, you do need to learn how to sell your abilities to the people around you. And you guys have talked in the past about, you know, places where you got to kind of earn your trust, right? You know, you deliver results and then you go back and because you ask and you want to do, well, I really on my next project, I would like to implement X. You know, and use this sort of thing that probably will take 10% more time, but I think I'll have benefit in the future. Well, what are you doing there? You're making a business case for the thing that you want to deliver. And so you've got to be able to do that. And so, you know, spend the time on kind of how do I factor a conversation? How does the person across the table think about their world? What are they being measured on? You know, business analysts, like their job isn't like just be a pain in the ass. Like their business is to, you know, they get measured on, do they get some certain kind of result, right? And whatever organization you're in, somebody is getting measured and paid and rewarded for certain behaviors. Well, what are those? And can you help make those better by the thing, you know, that you do? If I'm going to interact with somebody, like first thing I do is go and read their bio and their LinkedIn, you know, or whatever it is, like all those different tools. It's kind of, I don't know, like what matters to them, and find personal interactions, right? So, you know, at least one of you talks about being a parent. I'm not sure which one or multiple, but, you know, we have that in common, right? So I can kind of go, hey, you know, remember when you had to teach your kid to do whatever weird, gross thing that your kid needed to do? Well, now we have that in common. And so I can like break the ice, right? You know, so dealing with developers and business people who are under stress, you know, is probably very similar to dealing with kids who are trying to learn stuff in kindergarten. Yeah, so more than we'd probably like to admit.
Cool. So thinking back to your start, and what about some words of wisdom to people just getting started? Is freelancing the right thing for them, or should they take a tour in corporate development and get some experience in it? About what would you say to people that are just...
No, that's such a good question. You know, I, as much as I would love to say just dive into independence right away, I think I would have to look back and say that it kind of sucked, but you might want to put your time in first. You know, and there's a lot of reasons, but you just learn how to deal with people. You learn stuff that you can't get. You know, I think experience isn't like how much you learn about any particular thing. It seems to me to have evolved. And I mean, this is ridiculous, right? Like, I can't believe I'm saying like I have 20 years of work experience. Like, I still feel young, but I'm not anymore. And it's all about pattern recognition. You know, I mean, and I started thinking about this actually when I was listening to you guys to prepare, you know, it's just like, what are algorithms, except that we came to understand collectively as a group that there are certain ways to address certain problems that tend to have commonality. Well, that's exactly what experience is. It's just a little softer, you know, that we have these patterns that we can recognize in the way people work together. And if I try X, there's a reasonable probability that Y is going to happen. And the bigger your data set, I mean, I don't know, maybe we're just machine learning, right? You know, the bigger your data set, you tune the model, you can't explain why that happened, but it matters. So yeah, to go back to the question, I probably would tell people not to run out of college or, you know, start real early as a freelancer. Unless you have like a really good brain trust or some mentors, or you join a more senior crew, there could be a lot of ways to kind of fill in the blanks there. Or you have a particular really small skill set, like, you know, I don't know, I only work on government contracts for the Navy because I served in the Navy or something like that. Like, you might have a hook, but yeah, I would not go back to the things that I did. But I'm glad that I did them. So probably put the time in and get some, dare I say, some gray hairs, you know, on the chin.
Yeah, I got a couple. That's a fantastic answer. Yeah, thank you for that. If people want to follow you, what kind of social media and other plugs can you give for yourself?
Sure. I'm pretty boring on social media. I almost don't exist, but I do use LinkedIn pretty heavily, which is kind of a lame answer, I guess, but you can always find me on LinkedIn. I actually check the messenger. Most people don't, but I'm at David Ledgerwood on Twitter. More important than that, I would love if everybody checked out our podcast. So it's going to be at The Frontier Pod, and you can check out gun.io/frontier. Obviously, if anybody is interested at all in freelancing or, you know, any of the things that we do, it'd be super cool to have you on. So.
All right, Ledge. Appreciate you coming on the show.
It is so good to be here. You guys are awesome. Thanks for doing what you do.
That was David Ledgerwood. Ledge is the host of Gun.io's The Frontier Podcast, where he interviews professionals across the software engineering leadership spectrum. The Frontier is the vehicle for exploring innovation through storytelling with some of the most inspired and inspiring voices in software and product.
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes. And be sure to join us on Slack.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And follow us on Twitter at SixFigureDev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.